Welcome to the Real Family Guys podcast with Jeff Emery and Trey Gibson, the show where education and experience collide to help you go deeper in your parenting. Broadcasting from Abilene, Texas, here are your hosts, Jeff and Trey.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of the Real Family Guys podcast. This is the show where experience and education collide.
Brrr, boom.
To take you deeper in your parenting.
It was a cold bomb, Trey.
It was a cold bomb. Is that like cold fusion?
Exactly.
Boom! I didn't mean that to go there. Today is February the 7th, 2014. Our topic for today is social media junkies. Do we let our kids get hooked? That's right. Today, Jeff and I are going to spend a little bit of time talking about social media. The fact that it is a... It's just an experience that we're all going to have. And Jeff and I are going to talk a little bit today about how, up until this point, most of us, I mean, like Jeff and I, neither, I don't think either one of us grew up having technology like social media in our houses from the start as kids. You know, we didn't get that until much later in our lives. However, we're raising the first generation that, I mean, like every single one of my kids has handled an iPhone since they were old enough to have the dexterity to do it. Yep. So we're going to talk about, I mean, we're kind of pioneer parents here. And we're going to talk a little bit today about, Jeff and I are going to bring together some of the ideas. We're going to skip past this idea of, is social media the devil? Because neither Jeff nor myself believe that it is. We both believe that it's a place, it's a reality, it's a fundamental reality for us as parents, and we've got to learn how to deal with it. So today, we're going to talk a little bit about what do we like about it, but also what are some of the things that we need to be taking a look at, watching out for, and some of the principles and foundations we need to lay for our kids before we start letting them have these access, and while, maybe you have kids already into it, what are the principles they need while they're handling social media to be reasonable and acceptable and all that other good jazz when responsible. That's not what I was looking for. Before we do that, let's jump into some quick housekeeping today, guys. If you want to be a part of the show, if you want to make sure you stay updated on all the new episodes that we have at the Real Family Guys Podcast, make sure you go to The Family Podcast. That is the sister station of the Real Family Guys Podcast. On the right-hand side, you'll see where there's an enter-in box there for your email and your name. If you enter your email and your name into that little box, you'll make sure you get put on a list that is an exclusive list for those of you guys that want to listen to the show and stay updated with the new shows that are coming out. It just kind of reminds you, hey, we had a new episode today. Here's what we talked about over at the Real Family Guys Podcast. Make sure that you never miss out on that one episode. If you just would have heard, it could have changed everything. Guys, also don't forget, if you have any questions, comments, thoughts, concerns, something you want to put on the show or a question you'd like to hear aired and asked to the audience, remember, it doesn't even have to necessarily just be just about like your kid or your family, just a generalized question. Hey, what do you do when? Jeff and I love answering those questions for you. There's a lot of ways you can do that. You can hop over to the EFM podcast. Over the right-hand side, you'll see a green little bar running on the long side of the page. It says, ask Trey and Jeff a question. Whenever you click on that, as long as you have a microphone connected to your computer, or if you do it on your iPad or your iPhone or anything that has a microphone to it, yes, it works in all those cases. When you click on that bad boy, you can actually record us a message. It'll go straight to us. We'll air it on the show and answer it for you. You do not have to put your actual name. You can always email us at treygibson@thefamilypodcastnetwork.com. You can also email Jeff at jeff@texasfamilyinstitute.org, or you can go to the Contact Us page over on the Family Podcast. We want to hear your questions. We love answering your questions. Also, guys, we love feedback. Tell us what you love. Tell us what you hate. Tell us what you want to hear. Tell us what you want to hear change. Those kinds of things. Jeff and I welcome your comments. Don't forget to do that as well. All right, guys, with all of the housekeeping out of the way today, Jeff, let's kick this. Let's get this party started.
You know, this is one of those days where we need something to kind of get this kickstarted, because Trey, here in Abilene, I don't know if it's been any different in the thriving metropolis of Tuscola, but it has been bone cold. I'm talking like the wind chill cutting through, taking us down into negative digits here in Abilene today. The streets are iced over, schools are closed down, the apocalypse is happening, dogs and cats living together, chaos. It's been cold.
Dude, it's been awesome, man. You know, a lot of people make fun, like, you know, we've got a couple of longtime listeners of Family Podcast and Real Family Guys Podcast that live up in Michigan, and like John, for instance, and he's always emailing and asking questions, and like most of the time, folks from up north make fun of us Texans, because, you know, anytime, you know, we have a, you know, they're up there with, you know, 6 to 8, 10 inches of snow, right, and they're plowing through that stuff like, man, who cares, man, let's go to school.
Six tenths of an inch accumulation, right?
we don't even get an inch, right, and we shut down schools. But I always tell people, I'm like, it's because we're not prepared for this. I mean, we see this so rarely. We rarely have the equipment. I mean, you take Abilene, you know, take Abilene municipal, right? And I mean, I think they have two. I think they have one. No, I take it back. I think there's one snowblade that they have here. And whenever we have stuff like this, we have to borrow snowblades from other cities to put that in.
Doesn't happen that often.
Yeah, we don't have snow chains that we keep for our vehicles. And so for us, I mean, even an inch of snow is a big flipping deal. I mean, that's if you remove the doofuses that get out on the road. And so anyway, I always say that When everybody goes home is when Trey comes out to play. So like I love this weather after dark, Jeff, because once everybody goes home and nobody wants to come out, that's when I am not in my four-wheel drive. We got a four-wheel drive. Not when I'm getting in my four-wheel drive. That's when I get in my front-wheel drive that has an emergency handbrake. And that's when I come out. You should have seen me going to the store to get diced tomatoes for dinner tonight. Let me tell you, every corner, power slide. True story.
Oh yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. I don't do it very often anymore, but I grew up in Lubbock, and Lubbock got a lot more cold weather than Abilene does. But I used to find when we did get snow and ice and stuff, find a nice empty parking lot that didn't have anything in it, no concrete barriers for parking and stuff like that, and just go out and do donuts. And what's fun is when you get there and you see you're not the only one who had that idea, because there's already
Yeah, I found the fresh parking lot. I found the fresh parking lot to go do it in, and I bested a few donuts before I came home. I guess I'm a Toys R Us kid, man. I don't want to grow up.
Never. Well, hey, speaking of growing up, that's a good segue into what we're going to talk about today, because we're focusing on some social media stuff tonight, and I want to give Trey props for this, because normally I hunt around the web and find things to talk about, but this is one that Trey put out there for us tonight, and I think it's a great topic. But social media is something that is out there. Everyone is affected by it, even if they choose not to take part in it. It's something that years ago didn't used to be such a big thing, but I think that the internet has just kind of become a reality of our everyday life, and we are a connected society. And the more connected we are, the more we find ways to share and network and combine and overlap. And sometimes when we sit back and look at how it's changed how we function, it doesn't always seem like such a good idea. So I guess we ought to start off with our caveat today, Trey, that as we talk about social media, we are not saying that social media is a bad thing.
Yeah, no.
Far from it.
Neither one of us believe it.
Nope. Social media has been, like I said, it's a game changer, and it's changed the way we think and act and feel and behave and treat each other. But as with any other thing that is value neutral, the internet and social media, when they are used incorrectly or irresponsibly, can have some pretty adverse effects on our functioning as individuals and as families, which is what is our main concern here on the Real Family Guys podcast.
Well, I know that we're going to get a lot of folks that are going to Google search, social media, and there's going to be a group of you guys that are going to be coming in. You're going to be listening to this show at the start, and you're walking into this with the mentality that it's the devil, and I'm looking for people to back us up, in that. If you are those group of people, I'm telling you guys, don't listen now,
because Jeff and I, that's not the podcast for this.
This is not that one for this, and we're going to talk about some of the dangers that are inherently involved with it, and some of the principles and the foundations we need to lay for our children in this. But again, this is not the show for you if you're looking for somebody to back up and say, oh, it's horrible and we don't want it. Both Jeff and I actively use Facebook. I do have a Twitter account. I'm very inactive on it except for posting shows out there. I'm one of the worst Twitters, basically, is what it comes down to. We're talking about LinkedIn, etc., and we believe in all these things, and I'm an active Facebooker, and so we believe there is a place for it within our families and all the way into our kids as well, especially if we can teach them a few core fundamentals. So we teach them not only the good stuff about it and how to utilize it appropriately, but also let's talk about some of the dangers. No different than, like, for instance, Jeff and I were talking earlier before we started the intro segment today. We've never made it a secret that we're a firearm family, that we enjoy firearms in our household when it's done in a safe and a controlled manner. Whenever we teach our kids the principles of it, we teach them all the stuff that we do. And then also, at the same time, we have to be hyper-responsible. We acknowledge that we accept the responsibility level as firearm owners and having little kids as well, that there's a higher level of responsibility compared to other things that we leave around the house. Kind of like if you have really, really sharp knives that you keep in your household for, like, culinary art and that kind of thing, right? There's a responsibility that goes with that to make sure that your kids cannot get into positions without the knowledge, education to not hurt themselves. And so Facebook and social media carries that same kind of weight, and that's kind of the analogy we're going to draw today is that it's a wonderful tool, just like firearms or or knife sets. They're a wonderful tool, but they can come with levels that are inherently dangerous. And Jeff's wife was actually visiting with us before we started recording today, and she actually made a very insightful point. that we have a tendency to vilify social media, because we hear about these horrible stories about these kids that have bullying and they commit suicide, right? And because of that, and that's horrible. That's absolutely horrible.
It's those stories that make the news, though.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Terrible stuff.
And so we have a tendency to see situations like that, and we over-contextualize, we over-generalize these individual stories, which, again, they're horrible. And that should never happen. But we over-generalize that, and we accept on often an anxiety and a fear in ourselves towards our kids that's going to happen as well, even in a place where maybe is always the answer, but it's pretty unlikely.
So the article that we found is from one of the websites that we like to frequent, because she's just got – it's just chock full of fantastic stuff. And if you want to go visit a blog that's got good stuff, then you should go visit Mom Mastery, M-O-M-A-S-T-E-R-Y, MomMastery.com. And Glennon, the author of Mom Mastery, has posted some insightful things from her own experience on social media. And so that's kind of our entry point tonight, is we want to go ahead and kind of dive into her blog post here on – she calls it Six Reasons Social Media is Dangerous for Me. And we're going to kind of go through the reasons, because they resonate, don't they, Trey? I mean, as we read these, we're like, yeah,
oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've done that. Yeah, I feel that sometimes. So when we were looking at this, these are not necessarily things that everybody struggles with, but I think enough people see and have been affected by social media in these ways that we can all relate to them. And so what I'm looking at is that, far from social media being a terrible thing, these are some pitfalls. If we're not careful, if we're not aware, that we can get wrapped up in and can turn social media into being something that affects us adversely rather than being something that we can benefit from and grow with.
Yeah,
so.
Agreed.
So she starts off by just talking about how she views social media, and it's kind of what we've already said, is that social media inherently is not any more dangerous than Rice Krispies, right? But social media plus human nature can become problematic, and what we mean by that is, I don't know why, but as humans, we have a tendency toward self-destruction. I mean, we do some pretty awful things, both to ourselves and to other people. And when human nature creeps into something that is in and of itself value neutral, it can have some pretty negative outcomes. And so we need to look at this as an opportunity to use social media in a healthy way rather than get sucked into some of the ways that it can become negative for us, right? So she goes on to say that she went on an internet fast. She spent 40 days without even logging on, right? Now, I got to say, Trey, although that sounds appealing to me, it's like, man, what a great thing to be able to unplug and disconnect. Honestly, I'm a little bit scared about that because it is the word I used earlier is ubiquitous. You know, it's one of those big words that means that it's so prevalent, it's so common that everybody uses it. I have what she labels here at the end of her blog post. I have FOMS, fear of missing something. Right? I don't think I could disconnect.
Yeah.
FOMS, fear of missing something, is what she talks about. And so 40 days, first of all, I just think that's an accomplishment. So props to this author here for being able to do that.
Well, you know, one of the things that Jeff and I we talked about at the start of this, when we were kind of formulating how we're going to do this, there's always two different ways that we can approach any one of these shows. And one of those ways is we approach it, here's what you do with your kit. And that's often valuable, that's good, and we do that quite frequently in these shows. However, Jeff and I really talked about taking a little bit of a different approach today. We want to spend more time talking today about what do we do as individuals. And so I love how you segued into this, Jeff, because you know, you started talking about, okay, I have FOMS. And I think that's an important way to approach this.
Sure.
Because we have a tendency to see about how can we fix things in our kids, but the reality is our kids are watching us to learn everything they're going to do in their lives, right? And the best way to teach and to train our kids to have good, solid social networking skills is to start with ourselves. If we're going to be using this stuff on a daily basis and they're going to see us be using that, they need to see us set healthy perspective. So you're going to hear a lot of stuff that you're going to be like, okay, when are we going to talk about the kid piece to this? Every single thing that we're going to say today is the kid piece of it. However, we are acknowledging that the fundamental education of our kids when it comes to social media is going to come directly through how do you handle it.
It starts with us. And how we handle it, honestly, Trey, we are on the pioneering edge.
Yes.
We talked about this earlier, that we are the we're experiencing this phenomenon without having anybody having experienced social media before.
I mean, yeah, we're writing the book.
Didn't exist.
Yeah.
You know, I saw something recently. It was one of those internet memes where it had a guy who was surrounded by old technology. He had a boombox on his shoulder. He had a Walkman in his hand. He had a personal computer that was like one of those blocky Apple IIe's or something. But there was this table full of things. You know, there was a stopwatch. There was a cassette recorder. There was and it was just surrounded so much so that he was kind of almost lost in all that technology. And at the bottom it said, all this technology now fits in a smartphone that fits in your pocket.
Yeah, you know? Man, wow.
And so the technology has changed so much in just the past decade or so. I've been enjoying actually recently that apparently this is Facebook's 10-year anniversary, right? Have you seen all the little...
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah. They've been doing this thing where you can go and they've got a little video generator that will go through and
I did see that. Yeah, everybody's doing that.
Yeah, and a lot of people are posting. It's a one and a half minute video. I think that a little bot on Facebook will go and it'll sort through your most popular posts and pictures and shares and likes that you've gotten over the past 10 years or however long you've been on it in the last 10 years, and it creates this little 1 minute video that's kind of a retrospective, and it's nice and it's sweet, but to realize that something that is so pervasive in today's society as Facebook has only been around 10 years. It's still really in its infancy. It's not even really in its adolescence yet, you know?
Yeah.
And so we're experiencing things that we're learning how to deal with ourselves. And yet at the same time, we're having to set guidelines and rules and structures and healthy boundaries for our kids when we're really kind of learning them for ourselves. And that's really what this blog post was about when it caught my eyes. I was reading through here. You know, Trey, when you showed it to me, I was like, man, this is good stuff. Oh, man, that's a good point too. You know, I just kept seeing all the things she was writing. I was like, man, this is stuff we probably need to talk about and dialogue about. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we do want to eventually apply this to how do we take this stuff and what we've learned from it with the life experience we have as adults and our ability to kind of evaluate and analyze and then be able to teach our kids what roadblocks and what pitfalls they can avoid while they can use social media as a force for good, right?
That's right.
Okay, so let's go ahead and jump into this list here. She starts off saying that what she learned during her 40-day fast from the internet was, number one, social media had transformed her into an input junkie.
Oh, man, that's good.
Now, Trey, my day job is I work at a drug and alcohol treatment center, and I don't work in treatment necessarily where I'm working firsthand with people who are addicted to a substance or alcohol or something who are coming in for detox and into treatment. I actually work on the prevention side, but I do get to interact regularly at work and through my private practice with people who are literally addicted to something. And so when she says an input junkie, That's a very vivid imagery for me because I've seen people who are literally addicted and junkies and the stuff that she describes, it's really interesting because the internet is not necessarily a chemical addiction that we have to a substance, but she experiences some of the same effects that we have when we go through withdrawals, right? She talks about being twitchy and fidgety and not being able to know what to do with herself. And during unfilled moments, she had anxiety where she had to take in something, right? And I know exactly what she means. I mean, Trey, I can't even go to the bathroom anymore without taking my iPad or my iPhone in there to browse Pinterest or something. Okay, that was probably TMI. but you know what I'm saying? We don't sit down and just sit still for a few minutes when we're waiting in line, when we're at stoplights even.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I think a lot of times we get caught up in like the idea of like an iPhone or an iPad or an Android device or tablet or whatever else. But I think, I mean, when it comes to being an input junkie, even before those were around, I think we've been like this. This has been a pervasive issue long before the smartphone or the tablet was created because, you got to think about it. You hop in your car, even 10 years ago when we didn't have these, you hop in your car, what was the first thing that you did?
Radio.
Turn on your radio. There's always something. We have the TV on when we wake up in the morning because we listen to the news. We get in our car. We got the radio as we go to work. Then we got people. We've got radio streaming at the office. Then we hop back in our car. Then we listen to the radio. I mean, we've always been assaulted by that. And I remember that even long before this, I remember getting kind of convicted about this. And I had never thought to word it an input junkie. That's a pretty insightful word choice. Sure. But I remember when I got in the car one day and I started thinking, you don't ever, for me, it came as a spiritual conviction because I had read that statement that said, be still and know that I am God. And that had caught my attention. I thought, you know, I don't ever be still. I am always doing something or talking to somebody or something. Blah. And I remember that first day that I turned that radio off. And I mean, I instantly was addicted to that because, man, it was so, I started thinking and I started coming up with ideas. And a piece of the Family Podcast Network was kind of was shaved off of finally just shutting the radio off and just thinking about, okay, what can I do? The idea to move it from a blog to this came out of one of those quiet conversations, just sitting down, challenging the way I was thinking Socratically, like we talked about last week.
Right.
But it came getting to do that because I finally shut the dadgum radio off in the car.
Well, shutting off the input stream is pretty difficult because, as we already mentioned, it's everywhere. I mean, you can't even stand in line at a restaurant or something like that without, there's a TV on in the background with a news channel on or a sports channel on. And not only are we assaulted with the visual images, even if the sound is turned off, there's a scroll on the bottom that gives you something to read, you know? There's so many sources of input that are coming in that I think that even though we're not hardwired necessarily, we become maybe softwired or trained or conditioned to always have something that needs to be where we're taking an input.
Yeah, good point.
So there's something that really resonates with me when I hear her talking about experiencing those withdrawal symptoms of having input, filling every unfilled moment. She turns around and says, perhaps the antidote for this constant connectedness is to log out, to unplug. And she says that she even has the words "be still" tattooed on her wrist, just a reminder that the things that really help us grow, being able to recognize our feelings, being able to search for creativity, inspiration, wisdom, inner peace. Those are the things that come in those empty moments, the quiet times, the downtime when we don't have any input coming in and we're allowed to, instead of taking things in, to generate something with our own brain.
But Jeff, I got a question.
Yeah.
What are you doing on Saturday?
Yeah. You're talking about tomorrow?
Yeah. Well, what are you doing? Cause I say we go, if nothing else, I say we go get our first tat, man.
My first tattoo. Be still on our wrists.
Hey, I'm sorry I interrupted for that.
No, that's I'm honestly I'm not adverse to that idea.
All right, we got our tats. All right, it's done. I got a buddy.
We'll have to post that. When we manage to do that, put it up as maybe do a blog about it, right? Because we need to create input for other people to have, right?
Yes. Yeah, you're right.
There's a disconnect there, right? No, but seriously, Trey, I have gone on retreats before. I don't know if you've ever had to do that, but where we're not able to connect, and recognizing the anxiety that I feel when I have to disconnect, that fear of missing something, that FOMS that she talks about here in this blog post, it doesn't last very long. Usually it's something that once I kind of detox that I begin to enjoy the peace and quiet and a place to think again without having other outside thoughts intruding. I'm able to ruminate and to just kind of chew on things. And I've really been able to enjoy those moments where I can do it. And unfortunately, I think that maybe I just do not seek out those moments of stillness enough, in my own life.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. So, once again, this social media has the potential, if we do not create those moments of stillness and time to think over things and be creative ourselves, it has the ability to kind of take over our brains and help us to not, I don't know, it's like we're trying to avoid loneliness or quietness,
yeah.
I guess. So, learning to value stillness and quietness, I think is a good thing. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, so practical application here, and how do we not only how do we engender that in our own value systems, but in such a way that our kids can do it? I think really setting up times that we check in and we check out, having times that are unadulterated. So, for instance, if we're gathered around a table, I mean, the phones go away, and we stick them on a counter, and we don't touch them. You know, of course, my wife and I are the only two that have them at this point, but we set that value for them. It's not because we're policing it up because that's what we should do. We've explained to our kids that you guys are more important to us right now, and though there's important things coming across that phone that we value and find to be important, right now, you guys are the priority. And we are going to disconnect. We're going to take ourselves out of the input stream for a little while, and we're going to sit down with you guys. So letting your kids see you make an active interest. Don't be afraid. I mean, you don't have to ham it up or anything, but make a deal about it. I'm stepping out of this. You know, I say, you know, you're going to put that on Facebook, Dad? Nah, not right now. I'm stepped out of Facebook for a little while. I probably won't mess with that until tomorrow. Letting your kids hear that you're doing those things, that you're stepping out of that input stream, is it can be very valuable, very powerful.
Sure. And Trey, that's a fantastic point you make. And what we always want to bring things back to is not only what we need to do for ourselves, but how that affects our kids, because they get to see it modeled in how we do things. And so we're setting up a framework for them of here's how to be connected to social media and to be able to share in other people's joys and their posts and their statuses and things like that, but also to be able to prioritize the people that are right in front of you, you know?
Yeah, that's good.
And it's not just our cell phones. I think, you know, for a long time, even before social media, there was a lot of talk about people who sat down to dinner and watched TV instead of talking, you know?
Yeah, it's good.
So this is probably something, it goes back to that human nature thing. This isn't just about social media. Social media is just fine. It's when we plug in that human nature piece that we mess things up, right?
Yeah, it's good.
All right, so moving on with this idea of being a junkie, being addicted, or needing to get something from social media. The second point she makes here is that she noticed during her fast that she'd become a validation junkie.
Oh, that's good.
Validation. Now that's a big word, validation. Let's go ahead and just kind of break it down a little bit. Validation is basically having somebody else approve of you or make you feel good about yourself.
There it is.
And that's what validation is. It makes you feel valid or whole or important or valued, right? And so what happens with social media is that that when we share things, which, hey, that's good, right? We're going to share something. And then what's happened is we've been conditioned, we've been trained to wait for somebody to respond, right? So I'll post something on Facebook or on Twitter or Instagram or something, and not just for the sake of posting it, but I want people to respond. I want people to click like. I want people to follow. I want to get that feedback from Facebook. How many people follow your page today? Who have you influenced? You know, what is your reach, right? And so I've learned I've kind of trained myself that if I don't get a measured response, then it's not good enough somehow, and that maybe I'm not good enough somehow.
You know,
that's scary. That's dangerous.
You've brought that up a point in a point. The last time we did a Facebook, when we were evaluating is it the devil or is it not? You actually brought that up. It was a really good point too. Is that a lot of times our kids are doing that? They're beginning to see how popular, how special, how awesome am I? Not based off of what they've discovered about themselves, what they love, what they accentuate, and the time that they put into themselves, but it's based off of how many likes do I get? How many followers do I have on Facebook? And I find that it's such an interesting trend, and I'm not exempt from that, too. I experience that same level, you know, in watching even just the Family Podcast Network. There is some level that I think on a deep fundamental level, we try to connect what we have in terms of responses, thumbs up, likes, etc., followers that we have on our shows, whatever else, as to how much we're loved and cared about. And that's a dangerous game to play, right? When we're beginning to tie up our self-worth, the value that we put behind ourselves through that validation of others, we're putting ourselves in a sticky spot, because the reality is we may put something out there that's amazing and awesome and 90% of all of our friends would love it, but let's just be honest. Facebook EdgeRank may keep 90% of them from getting it. And so we're walking around thinking that, oh man, nobody really cared about this. Nobody noticed that. But the reality is it could have just been that nobody saw it, or they just came at just the wrong time. They don't actually follow you. And so we can often be tying up our self-worth, how we evaluate ourselves, the overall self-worth that we have into just a very, it's a weakly supported, highly erroneous, you know, system of belief, and it can be, and we get hooked on it. We can absolutely get hooked on it. How many people love it? How many, you know, and we begin to develop our identity, our belief about who and what we are, based off of a system that's faulty at best.
Jay, that was a really powerful way to say it. I like the fact that you referenced a podcast that we did a while ago, and I think it was on Instagram that we were looking at the time.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah, that we were talking about middle schoolers, and I think Mary Hannah actually told us a little bit about her Instagram account.
Yep.
And I asked her, how many followers do you have? And she said, oh, well, earlier today I had like, you know, 900 and some, but I think I broke 1,000. And I was like, to the day, to the number, she knew how many followers she had.
That's right.
And that just kind of highlighted that one of the pitfalls, potential pitfalls of social media, especially things like Instagram and Facebook, where you can have likes and followers and friends and things like that, is that in years past, we didn't really have a way to quantify how popular we were. You know, I might have felt unpopular or uncool or something like that, but nowadays our kids can put in
that's what it was. Yes.
Yeah, that numerical value. And that has the potential, like you said, to really kind of shape at a special place in their development, to shape their self-concept and their value. And so as we're enjoying social media, because there's nothing wrong with sharing, right? There's absolutely wrong with putting it out there. Is that, we need to teach ourselves to remember that while it's okay to want validation, I mean, there's nothing wrong with wanting it.
Sure.
When we start to need it.
Need it. That's it. That's it. That's good, Jeff.
Right? It's okay to want a thing. It's not okay to need a thing, especially when it comes to validation. If anything, we ought to be able to like who we are enough that we validate ourselves, right?
That's it. Yep, that's it.
So the other day, I thought it was really interesting. We were doing a skills development thing at work, and one of our highly skilled presenters did this thing where he said, here's something I do with the kids sometimes to help them understand getting locked into labels and roles and needing to be validated by others. He says, he has them stand in front of him, and he steps back about 10 or 12 feet, and he has a basketball. He says, all right. He says, I'm going to throw you this basketball. I mean, you just need to catch it, okay? And so he'll throw them the basketball, and they catch it. Okay, hey, we're playing catch, and they'll throw it back, right? And then he'll look at them after a couple of tosses, and he'll say, okay, now – he'll look at him real serious and say, listen to me, because this is real important. You have no arms. Now I'm going to throw it to you. You have no arms. Now how are you going to catch it? And so they'll put their arms around their back because they listen to him. They hear him, and they follow his instruction, right? Yeah. And so they try to come up with clever and creative ways, and so they'll try to catch it with their legs, or you know, bend over in half and try and you know, do something. And for a while, it's kind of fun and everything. But eventually, he's got somebody planted in the crowd where he'll come up and he'll tell them, okay, same kind of thing. You have no arms. He said, a lot of kids think, oh, hey, I'll figure out a clever way to do it within the rules that you're giving me, that I have no arms, right? But he'll have a kid come up there who will kind of round out his illustration where he'll tell them, you have no arms. And he'll toss the ball to him and they'll catch it with their hands. He says, no, wait a minute. I told you you had no arms. Why are you using your hands? And the kid looks at him and says, you don't get to tell me who I am.
Ooh, that's good. Right? Yeah.
And so needing somebody else to tell you who you are and what makes you important and how to do things is a really dangerous thing. And when we can break out of that, we can learn to handle ourselves and we can learn to respond. So it's okay to want validation and want people to like you and to follow you and to think that that you're a pretty cool guy. But when we begin to need it, then we fall prey to all those things you were talking about earlier.
Well, you know, the flip side of this question then is how do we get to a point to where we are not validation junkies? You know, this is I think intrinsically this is a much more difficult question than meets the eye. You know, I mean obviously I think the first place we got to do is we have to start with us. And a large part of this question is about helping develop a sense of who we are. And we know who we are, what our strengths are, what are the areas that we either don't care about or we just don't know much about or just aren't very much our strengths. I think it comes just about knowing ourselves. And when we understand who we are and what we are and what we're capable of and what we're not, we can get to a point to where we can validate ourselves. I think a lot of people are fed this lie that if you say something like, wow, I'm really good at that, that is arrogance. Well, no, it's not. Arrogance is when you begin to believe that you're better than other people because you have that skill. Mm-hmm. I'm a good podcaster. I know I am. I have a skill set that has been rounded out to help me speak to people on a level of individuality in terms of parenting that helps me connect and convey information to help grow people into the parents they want to become. It's a part of what I am. It's a part of what I love. Is that an arrogance for me? No. But I also acknowledge that I don't have any skills in coding. So whenever it comes to a really difficult website question, you better believe that I hire out my guys that are amazing at it, right? And so there's that point that we have to self-validate ourselves. We have to know what we are. We have to know what we're good at. We have to know what we like about ourselves. We got to know what we want to change about ourselves and how to change it. We'll talk a little bit more about that here in just a second. But I think that's where it comes first. The flip side of that is, how do we teach it to our kids outside of modeling? I also believe that we shouldn't walk around like my daughter, Cora, she's 4 years old. She just turned four. She loves to walk up and say, Dad, how do I look? It's natural response to me every freaking time to want to say, oh my gosh, you look so beautiful. You look so pretty, right? But I have trained myself that when she asks me that question, I say, how do you think you look? I think I look pretty. There you go. And then I might compliment her on something. Like, oh, my gosh, I love that color you picked out. I think that's great, right? So instead of her coming to me and immediately getting answers, I want her formulating first. Now, it's okay to seek out, what do you think about this? Do you think this looks okay? You know, I want your opinion on this as well. But teaching kids to first establish what they think, what they believe, what they know is powerful because it helps them combat this, oh, I must know what you think so that way I can think it too.
Learning not to get caught up in becoming a validation junkie is, as you said, Trey, so much harder than you might think. And it might be the topic for another podcast. Or,
yeah, that's a whole podcast. You're right.
But I think there are a lot of little ways. And you've hit the nail on the head when it comes to just learning more about ourselves and learning to be okay with ourselves. One of the questions I frequently ask when I'm working with people who are experiencing depression or anxiety or stuff like that is I'll ask them, do you like yourself? Are you happy with yourself? And some people will look at me like it's a question they never considered. Like, well, why should I need to be happy with myself? And I'm like, well, you know, you're talking about how other people treat you and how you feel, but are you worthy of being somebody's friend? I mean, do you consider yourself worthy? And we play the empty chair game sometimes where I'll say, okay, let's pretend like there's another you, okay? You know, if there's a Trey sitting in this chair right over here and he's your best friend and he starts talking about himself, said, man, I feel like I'm stupid and I can't do anything right and I'm not good enough, right? I said, as his best friend, what would you say to him? And, you know, they'll say, well, I tell him, you know, that that's not true and he's a good guy and I'd try to encourage him and make him feel better. I said, okay, all right. So if that really is just you doing that for yourself, is kind of a weird concept, but here's my basic rule is we need to be at least as nice to ourselves as we would be to our friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So learning to validate ourselves is a skill that when we can learn to do it, it means that we can accept validation from other people's and enjoy it without needing it.
So, yeah, that's good.
All right. Moving on, number three, Glennon mentioned that during her social media fast that she learned that that social media actually lured her towards shallow and rigid thinking. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, I really love this point because one of my biggest pet peeves, what I see happens, especially on Facebook, is where people, instead of using it as just a way to post something that's interesting to them or their opinion on something, they start to engage in debates. Right. And yeah. And to date, I have never seen anybody convince anybody else of anything by a series of back and forth posts. All it does is inflame sensibilities and people getting upset with each other. And it just generally ends very badly. Sometimes some people actually defriending each other on Facebook because they get caught in this. If this person expresses an opinion that I disagree with, it is my moral obligation to continue to post on their wall
to crush them.
Them that that they are abjectly wrong.
You know, so, I don't want people to hear us wrong too. You know, there is a place I think for a good spirited debate on Facebook, and I've seen it happen where people can be respectful and kind and different opinion and happen, but I'm going to give it, you know, maybe like a 0.5 out of 10.5, you know, 9.5 times. It doesn't happen that way. I mean, just people rarely are kind and respectful, and I think there is a base for that kind of thinking happening, but it typically doesn't. And people, like you said, people are mean. They want to crush that opinion. They want to shred people and their belief systems. And it's not a good place for it. But you know, I like one of the things that she put in here. She goes, "It seems as though I had trained my brain to translate everything I experienced through the day into 140 characters or less." Now, there's a small part of me that's not necessarily like abject to this idea of 140 characters or less. I think, especially me, we have a tendency to be too wordy sometimes.
Sure.
And sometimes if we just simplify, especially me, guys, I am one of the most wordy guys out there. I know that. But if we just have a tendency just to simplify out the stuff in our lives, we really can stop and appreciate this simplistic beauty of life. But I do agree, there's just some things out there that are just too wonderful to explain in that. And I think, you know, like one of, you know, well, maybe I better not say that. I have a guy that I listen to on a podcast, and he has a phrasing for that that mentality of thinking very small, but it might be considered a little bit crude the way he says it. But anyway, that we have a tendency to think very, very small and very, very unidimensional. And I really do think Facebook does encourage some of that too. It encourages us to see everything as that one phrase instead of let's expound, let's break it deeper, let's take it a little bit further, and let's go in. So anyway, I thought this is a good one. I think it's good.
Well, and I think you said it very well there, that although there is value in simplifying things and being able to put them succinctly, the potential pitfall, once again, that's what we're talking about here. Social media is not a bad thing. Simplifying things is not a bad thing. But one of the pitfalls built into simplifying is that sometimes we take out the shades of gray that need to be there by turning things into black and white thinking, you know? And so somebody puts an opinion out there and somebody else takes the other opinion, and suddenly you've got people taking sides on things, and that's not necessarily how the world works.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, even if you just think about, what do we have one or two things that I see extremes happen here, and don't get me wrong, there's middle ground for everybody, but number one, you see people that just only post bad stuff, right?
Right.
Now that you know the grays and the blacks of life are just a constant. You're going to have those times in your lives that just are going to be more bleak, and that's a part of it. And then there's also those folks that just seem to they put the rainbows and unicorn farts all the time. Everything is bright and sunshiny for them all the time. Bowl of cherries mentality. And don't get me wrong, those are a part of life, and they're wonderful, and they need to be there. But I do agree. I think Facebook has a tendency to draw one or the other of those two out of people, and we don't get that full picture. I love how you said that a minute ago. We miss the grays in life because we're not getting the accurate picture of what's going on. We're seeing all the successes of this person, think that they're completely successful. We have no idea what is going on behind that. So how do we counter that with our kids? I think one of the best things that we can do is number one, don't allow your conversations to turn into just those one or two sentences with them. You got to expound. You got to take them deeper. I, honest to God, believe that there is a value in asking that question. How was your day? Oh, it was fine. We want to stop there. One or two sentences, right? Well, hey, no, I mean, past the pleasantries. How was it today? What made it fine? So that's one of my favorites. It was fine. Yeah. What made it fine today? What made it a good day? And then launching into that. Or if they say, oh, it was bad. Oh, tell me a little bit more about that, right? I mean, sure. So what made it a bad day? Yeah, dig deeper. Ask those second, third, fourth, fifth follow-up questions. I recommend when you do it, don't use the words why. Well, why did that make you upset? That has a tendency to put little kids on defense. Well, that puts most humans on defense. Say, use the word what. Oh, okay. So what about her calling you that name? You know, ask those kinds of questions with the word what at the start of it, and dig deep and go far with it. And don't be afraid to let your kids see your dark or your brights as well. You know, let them get that full painting of what it's like to be an adult, even for you.
You know, Trey, I love what you're talking about there with using different question stuff. I actually read something recently that it was geared toward husbands and wives, but you know, that when we ask our spouses, you know, how was your day, and we get that fine response, you know, it says we're asking the wrong questions, right?
And I
don't know if you saw that post or not, but I was like, man, this is good stuff, because even from a teaching perspective, you know, as an educator, as an instructor, and presenter, I've learned a lot of times when you ask closed-ended questions, you are really locking yourself into getting, you know, little piecemeal answers, right?
Well, do you know who wrote that article?
I don't recall off the top of my head.
It's Miss Glennon, the lady we're reading now. She wrote that. That was the first article that I got from the listener who wrote it in, was Glennon's article on that. And that was one, I'm sorry, I'm stealing that one for Family Podcast Network. But that was whenever he also sent me another one. John also sent me another one saying, hey, don't forget this one too. And that was the social media one written by Glennon as well.
Yeah, that's great stuff.
She's pretty sharp lady.
Yeah, what she was saying was, you know, we need to ask those open-ended questions with our spouses instead of saying, how was your day?
That's good.
We need to look at our spouse, because how was our day? Over time, we learn we don't really want to hear about the other person's day. We're just these are the pleasantries that we have to get past, and so it becomes a meaningless question. Instead, she says, we need to ask questions like, tell me, what was the most interesting thing that happened to you today? All right? Because then that's, oh, well, you really want to hear something. And then it also makes them think and dig it a little bit deeper. And so it opens it up to a bigger discussion. Or, you know, hey, share with me something that you found fascinating today. You know, to engage about their day, that lets them know that you care more about the deeper things, and you're not going to get trapped in just the shallow things. And I think we need to do that with our kids. And so the solution to being, stuck in that shallow, rigid, black and white thinking that we can tend to get stuck in when we are input junkies and validation junkies. The source is to think, or the skill that we need to develop is to think bigger and to learn to explore and to delve and to dig in our interactions with people rather than just allowing them to be really one dimensional.
One last little thing on that too, for you guys that have little kids. Sometimes what we're talking about here, you know, we're talking about in the premise of our spouses, and then we think about it in terms of how that can translate to our older kids. Well, what if you have little bitty kids whose communication is more limited? It's one of the things that we recommend over like the family podcast. We talk about this a lot, but in our household, we have a 1-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old. And so that, you know, they may not necessarily understand some of the vernacular that we might use for an older adult. So one of the things that we have in our household when we sit down for dinner is we have what's called sunshine and cloud. And so sunshine is just, I mean, it's exactly that, something that was sunshiny. It was those bright colors that we talked about. Tell us something that made you happy or made you joyful or, you know, made you smile or, you know, something that you really liked about today. You know, we share that. But then we also have the cloud moment. You know, what's something that made you sad or upset or angry, right? Ooh, let's talk about that. What's something that made you jealous today? And we give that opportunity to paint.
Help them explore.
Help them explore those things. And so sunshine and cloud can be a great thing. And my kids still, I mean, they don't let me forget that now. We sit down at the table. We get done, you know, in our house we pray. And so we get them praying. The very first thing is, Dad, don't forget sunshine and cloud. Oh, yeah, that's right. Let's talk about that. And then we launch into that. And they want to know mommy and daddy's always too, which always fascinates me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good stuff. We actually do that in staff meetings. And sometimes we call them sunshines and rain clouds. Sometimes we call it highs and lows. But my favorite one, that sticks with me, is sometimes when we do it, we call it happies and crappies.
I love it. Yeah. I love that.
All right. So point number 4 on what she learned from her internet fast was that social media actually threatened her only source of real peace and joy, which was gratitude. Right. And she talks about when she experiences those moments, you know, those moments that are amazing and that are spectacular, that you just want to hold on to, that's where we begin to develop that attitude of gratitude, where we can be thankful for the blessings that we have and just feel like we're overwhelmed by a sense of awe or wonder or fascination. Those moments are amazing and they're important. But unfortunately, what social media kind of trains us to do, or at least a potential pitfall here, is that we can get lost in not being present in the moment, but rather thinking, wow, this is so remarkable. How am I going to share this? Where am I going to put it? Should I do it on Facebook? Should I just tweet it out? Am I going to put it on Instagram? Right. And so as soon as we have recognized that it's a fascinating moment that we need to dwell in, and then we shift into how can I share this, we've lost the moment and we've lost the opportunity to develop that gratitude that helps us really appreciate those moments.
Yeah. I think that's really good. I agree.
So the question is, what do we do about that? Because we kind of get locked into this false idea that sharing is caring, and that we have to share every moment of our lives, right? Even to the point of absurdity, to where we kind of see people joke about oversharing on Facebook, and especially the one I hear a lot on Instagram is people taking pictures of their food. Have you heard that? Apparently a thing that the people are locked into fitness or they're foodies and they want to describe their food, and so they take a picture of every meal they eat before they eat it. And why not just enjoy the meal? I mean, you can take a picture of it, but that's like my daughter likes to joke sometimes about describing things in ways that are indescribable. Like the other day, she came up and she said, "Hey, Dad, did you know that my favorite letter in the alphabet is the color 9?" Right? Yeah. You know, you're trying to explain things. You're taking a picture of food. Well, food is, well, yeah, you can describe it, its look, but unless you can describe its texture and its taste how it makes you feel full or if it's light, or I mean, there's so many other ways to experience food that it really kind of makes it a shallow experience just to take a picture of it, you know?
This was something that I actually got convicted a while back, and it actually started long before this was really a big deal. I actually remember reading an article in a psychological journal documenting a guy who became addicted to living his life behind his camera, his DSLR. Uh-huh. And he was, you know, taking pictures of his family to the point that he literally stayed behind it the whole time, and he was getting just in trouble with his wife and his kids about how he never put the camera down. He was always videotaping, or he was always DSLR, you know, he was taking those nice pictures and he lived behind that camera. And I remember that really stuck with me. I thought it was a fascinating phenomenon. But I began to notice that there was kind of an overlay in terms of what was happening with, you know, the minute that something funny or awesome or cute happened, you know, what was the first thing I wanted to do? I was grabbing the daggum, you know, iPhone so I could snag a picture of it so yep. I could throw that up on Facebook. And don't get me wrong. I don't think that's a bad thing. I'm not saying y'all should feel convicted. It's a major piece. The folks in the audience at the Family Podcast Network have made it very, very clear that their favorite thing to see on my Facebook page is pictures of my family and the interactions that I have, whether it's with the kids or washing dishes or whatever else. That's the kind of connection people want. So don't get me wrong, that the people want a connection with people through that. However, I think Glennon brings up a great point here is that when our initial reaction is, oh, sweet, cute mom, we got to immediately record that, we often can lose some of the nuances. It's like if you sip a wine, like a really nice fine wine, and you don't, and you swallow it and you immediately eat something. That's a big no-no in culinary art because you're supposed to let that flavor wash across your palate mm-hmm. and you're supposed to enjoy the first part of it and then the middle part of it and then the after flavors of a good solid wine. All of those are exquisite and you're supposed to enjoy that experience all the way to the very end of that sensory experience. And it's the same thing with our kids. If we're so quick to snag that phone and jack that picture real quick and throw it up there, we're missing those enjoyment of that moment, the physical pleasure, even the dopamine effects that we have and the endorphins that get released in the brain when we have sweet little tender moments with our kids. We're missing the sweet subtleties that can happen in those moments because we're so quick. Now, I'm not saying that if you got a quick moment, you know, you want to snag a picture or something like that to document it, put it for later. So what we're suggesting, like one of the things I suggest is to make sure you do this is if you can just skip it. Just skip it, and then just later in the day, blog about it and do your best to put the verbals to it. If you absolutely need to snag a picture, snag it, and then put your phone away. We can put that up on Facebook later once that's over. But be in the moment. Make sure your head's in the game when you're with your kid.
And that is really the answer, the skill on this level that we want to encourage is be present. Be in the moment. Live in that
there
moment.
There it is. Be present.
Learn to appreciate the present moment. So, Trey, you said that really well. I like that. All right, so number five on our list here, she says that during her internet fast, she learned that social media makes her feel bad, right? What happened was she halfway through her 40-day fast, she got jonesed, I guess, it was jonesing a little bit for an internet fix, and so she logged on real quick, and she logged into Facebook and clicked on a post from another blogger, and saw that blogger had received an award, and then she noticed something in her body. That she felt a little bit tense and a flutter in her chest that was like a low grade panic. She was like, wait, what's going on here? And what had happened was as she started to analyze it, is that in that moment, she had seen something good had happened to another person and she started to compare. She started to say, well, wow, here's another blogger that I respect and admire and they just won this award. Why didn't I? And you know, Trey, it took me back to this idea that I've heard other people describe with Facebook, especially as they connect with like old high school friends, that one of the phenomena that happens when we have like high school reunions is that there's a part of us that is looking for that validation, that we want to make ourselves feel better by going back to these high school reunions and knowing, oh, hey, that girl that dumped me in the 10th grade, you know, she's married, you know, to this other guy over here who, you know, is not doing as well as I am. And so it makes me feel a little bit better about myself, right?
Yeah.
Or the other way around, you know, we see somebody else at a high school reunion and we think, man, they really did well for themselves. And here I am, I'm stuck in a dead end job. I'm not making anything of myself. And so we get caught in this subtle human nature thing, which is to automatically fall back on comparing. And there's nothing wrong inherently with comparing. It's a good skill when you're at the supermarket and you're trying to save money. It's a good thing. And, you know, they teach it in math to help you evaluate, you know, what's less, what's more, how to, you know, find the value in things. But where we get trapped is when it comes to human beings and relationships, there is an inherent unfairness in comparing because human beings are too complex.
Yeah.
To really compare fairly, we can compare on a shallow level. You know, am I taller than? Am I shorter than? Am I bigger than? Am I smaller than? You know, but when it comes to ineffable, intangible, indescribable qualities, like, am I more successful? Am I happier? Am I healthier, right? There's so many ways and complexities to define those things, those nuances, that when we start comparing, what we do is we rob ourselves of our own contentedness, our own joy. And I think that's what she's describing here, is that phenomenon, is that that there's a potential pitfall in social media that allows us to tap into that part of our human nature where we fall back on this skill of comparing ourselves.
See, you know, you and I take a slightly different approach to this, and I have a sneaking suspicion that in the grand scheme of things, we come out the same place.
Yeah, probably.
See,
pretty close.
This is the one thing that I'm not going to say that I disagree with Glennon and how she wrote this, but I almost don't have a problem with the idea of comparison. Now, let's talk a little bit about what we're talking about here. I'm not talking about comparison of, I take a look at myself, and that's the opportunity that I wind up putting myself into a position to where I feel poorly about myself. I'm not that person. I love the way you said that a minute ago. The complexities of humans are so different. That's exactly right. You will not be that person. You cannot be. And the frank part of it is you don't want to be, because they're already doing it. And so you want to be doing your thing, and you want to do it in your way, and the way that suits your personality and preferences a little better. And so that's the stuff that I don't agree with, is looking at somebody else and the unattainability of ever becoming someone else being something that you look at and go, wow, man, I can't ever be that. This sucks to be me. That's not what we want. See, I on the flip side of that, I don't have a problem with some levels of comparison. So the two ways that we're talking about is one is the victimized thing. Here's a person that has a skill set that is amazing. Well, there's no way I could ever have that, right? I'm stuck who I am. I'm a victim to my own personality, and there's no way that I can change myself to be as successful as them or to be as muscular as them. And don't get me wrong, there's certain characteristics we can't change. I am 5'7". I'm never going to be as tall as you, Jeff. I mean, I'm past that point that I'm just not going to have a spurt unless I go and get Captain America's, jacked up sauce to turn into a super soldier. I'm not going to get as tall as you. I'm just not going to, right? So there's certain characteristics we cannot change about ourselves. But there are certain personalities and traits and things of industriousness or successfulness that we have the potentiality to be able to change. And so the victimized approach of, oh, there's no way that I could ever be that. That's not what we want. However, if we can teach ourselves and subsequently wind up teaching our kids to look at things and look at skill sets as attainabilities, I can do that. See, that's good comparison. If we see somebody who's industrious and they're always knocking out new content on their websites and they're always doing an amazing job as a parent, or they always handle this one situation the way that we want, or maybe their kids act amazing, or they're able to be the best, golfer or whatever, if we can look at those and say, oh, wow, that's awesome. I want to be like that. And we can pull certain traits. Remember, we can't be that person, but we can pull certain traits out that a person has and say, I'm going to engender those and I'm going to become that as well. See, to me, that's a positive comparison that we can take and say, I want to look like that. Now, we may not look just like them, but that doesn't mean we can't tone our bodies to look similar to them, right, in those kind of situations. And so there's an element that I don't have a problem with this, but I think where Glennon was going with that, and I think what you were saying earlier, I agree with y'all as well. There never needs to come a point where we can't be happy with who we are and what we are, and in terms of like engendering hope that we can make changes in the things that aren't that certain way. There's a certain part of that that can be kind of come a sickness in us, and it can lead us to a point where we feel victimized. In other words, I'm subject to who I am. There's nothing that I can do to change. Man, I suck, and they're awesome.
Right, and I agree with you. I think that that there is an element of comparison, especially when it comes down to where we see something that we admire in another person, and it motivates us to become a better person ourselves. That level of comparison can be very motivational and inspirational. And the pitfall that we're looking at here is where we're not necessarily going the admiration route so much as we are.
Right.
I can never be like that.
That's good. Yeah,
and that's where we. In comparison, we either elevate ourselves, oh, at least I'm not like that guy, or we diminish ourselves. Well, I can never be that guy,
Right.
And so from that aspect, I can really see what she says, what she's saying here. And so I guess the skill set that we're looking for of having being able to avoid that is just being contented with who we are, and learning that it's okay to be who we are and liking who we are. And, as I'm thinking about this, Trey, a lot of these are really kind of interconnected. I mean,
there's
the skill
thread.
for for being an input junkie is to just be still. The skill for validation is learning how to validate ourselves. The skill for not getting caught in that shallow thinking is to think bigger and not smaller.
Yeah.
The skill for that that gratitude, living in the moment stuff is to learn to be present, right?
Yeah.
And so all of these are kind of interconnected. I don't know. She just has some great stuff. At the end of her podcast or her post here, she uses this phrase that I've referenced several times here, where she said that what she learned overall is that she had a serious case of FOMS, FOMS, the fear of missing something. Yeah, what a great way to say that, right? Sometimes I think that that this is one of the potential pitfalls of social media, is that we are so interconnected, and because it does give us that feel good feeling, the dopamine release, the serotonin that comes in, and all those biochemical reinforcements that make us want to be connected, is that when we disconnect from that stuff, we notice the lack of it, and so we think that we're missing out on something. Right?
That's good. I love that.
So I guess what we want to do is just recognize that that although social media is an important part of our life, and it has become a bigger and bigger piece over the past couple of years, and honestly, as we become more technologically connected and we have instant access to each other, to communication, to entertainment, to news, to information, that this is probably a trend that's not going to change, and so we really should learn some of these pitfalls and learn how to do them in a healthy way so that we can enjoy social media without necessarily fearing that we're going to miss out on something, recognizing that social media, as important as it is only a part of what defines us and our experience as human beings. And so I guess kind of wrapping things up here, Trey, I'd like for our listeners to kind of take away that social media can be amazing.
Yeah.
And when we can handle ourselves in such a way that we've got good boundaries and we can handle it well, then we can teach our kids those necessary skills that they're going to need in order to navigate social media in a way that's healthy and helps them connect without being overly connected, and helps us also to remain connected in real life with those one-on-one relationships where, you know, we're not giving each other pokes on Facebook, but we're actually seeing each other face-to-face so we can share those hugs and those moments that make life worth living with our kids.
And something else Jeff and I want to leave you guys with is to remember today, we pitched this at the very start of the intro segment of this, is that we're talking about foundations here. And what we gave you guys is not a comprehensive list of the rules you need to know for Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or any of these other places. These are foundational core values to start out with. So remember, you're going to build a house on top of this in terms of rules and understanding that you're going to have with your kids. And I'm going to encourage you guys that if you look at these, see these all as modular, because each and every one of your kids is going to deal with these different. These are all fundamentals that every one of them need to know, but each one of your kids is going to struggle with something in a little bit of a different way. Some of them are going to struggle with getting on and playing Farmville so much, and they get to gaming it out and stuff in so much that they miss some aspect of something. Some of them are going to get to where they get their emotional and self-esteem part caught up into what's going on a little bit more. Some of them are maybe going to be a little more aggressive, and they're going to struggle with wanting to bully other people and those kinds of stuff, and we need to be aware that each and every one of our kids handles and deals with things differently when it comes to social media. So just be ready to start out with these foundations, but build a little bit of a different house with each one of your kids and make it adaptive in something that'll fit them and what their strengths are and what their areas they've got to grow in when it comes to social media.
So we're wrapping up this week, but I want to give a little teaser for next week, because as we mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, this is going to be published on February 7th. We publish on Fridays, which means that 7 days from today is a very special day. You know what that is, Trey?
Yes, I do.
It is
Valentine's Day.
Oh, I was going to say your birthday.
Well, you know what I've learned is that if I'm not careful, and I take, let me tell you, I made that mistake 2 years in a row where I saw Valentine's Day as my birthday and not Valentine's Day with my wife. Let me tell you, twice, 10 years, never happened again. So the first answer to that question for me is always, it's Valentine's Day. Then we can move on to the birthday stuff.
We're going to be able to double dip and do some celebrating next week, and hopefully Woot! Keep it kind of lighthearted. But one of the things that we love about the Real Family Guys podcast is that we get to love on our kids, and that's one of the foundational pieces here, is just teaching us how to experience that love. So we're going to do something fun next week. So we want to invite you back next week when we get to talk about love. And so I'm going to put it out here for all the interwebs to know, Trey. I love you, man. And I love this podcast. I love doing this with you. And I love the feedback we get from our listeners. So I hope that flows through this microphone out into the internet so that we can reach people in North America and Canada and Australia and England and all those other places you were telling me earlier that people are listening to this podcast. So come back next week and share the love as we get to celebrate Valentine's Day.
All right, guys. Well, we hope you sure did enjoy this episode of the Real Family Guys podcast. As always, make sure that you guys share this out on Facebook and all those other good places. We want to make sure that we share those out there. Hope you guys have a great rest of this weekend. And if nothing else, we'll see you guys next Friday.
I know.